Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We appreciate the fact that you're listening, and we appreciate your help here with our lists as we're putting together our top 10 Bay Area athletes of all time lists. We appreciate your feedback, even from Raider fans who are upset that between the two of us, JD, we have maybe one Raider on our lists here. Jim Plunkett getting some mention. Jack Tatum, one Raider fan, says, ridiculous. No wonder why y'all are working on air today. Shake my head. That's actually kind of funny. It's just tough. The Raiders are great teams, but they didn't necessarily have those, you know, they didn't have a Montana or a Barry Bonds type figure. And I know Kenny Stabler was phenomenal. 77, he had a great year, but I don't know. Gene Upshaw, I think, is maybe going to make my list. Jim Plunkett was great, and he should be in the Hall of Fame. But I don't know, even with his time at Stanford winning a Heisman, I don't know if I could. Well, I know that I can't put him in a list of the top 10 Bay Area athletes of all time.
Come on!
Yeah, and I mean, I can't either, to be perfectly. But I was trying to think, because I did give the Raiders consideration, but there was nobody that stood out as, okay, this guy's got to be here. You go around to every other team, and you know, even the Sharks, you go around to every other team, and there's at least one name that pops, right? At least one.
Yeah.
And nobody popped as far as the Raiders for me, other than maybe Kenny Stabler, but I just don't think he's just not of the same ilk of anybody else on the list that's among my at least top nine.
Yeah, and that's why I went to the offensive line. If no Raiders really popped like the others, but they were so good, well, maybe that offensive line was the engine of that success. So Jim Otto was a center, and I don't know how many people remember the great Jim Otto. Those who remember him know that he played every freaking game, and Gene Upshaw are the two leading Raiders on my list. But anyway, 3rd of July, and it looks like we will have baseball. We'll get back to our list here, but looks like we're going to have some kind of baseball season, JD. Fingers crossed. This season looks like the strange circumstances might actually, in some ways, favor the Giants and might actually hurt the A's a little bit. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would, although favor for the Giants is, I mean, it's a relative term. I mean, any team that figures to be bad is going to, in theory, have a better chance in a shorter season. And I think anybody that's good is going to, you know, the margin for error is reduced. Like I think the A's would have been, I think, a great pick to win between, I don't know, 95 and 100 games. Like, I think the A's have a real shot to win 100 games this year if they were playing a full season. But just because you're going to win, you know, just because you're going to win 100 games, if that's where the A's were headed, that doesn't mean that you're going to play at 100-win pace for the entire year. And the A's have been traditionally a team that starts slow, even the last couple of years where they were 31-29 after 60 and 30-30 after 60 the last 2 years. So, I think it hurts teams that figure to be good, and it helps teams that figure to be bad. That's just the nature of it. But does it turn a non-playoff team into a playoff team? I think it could. The Giants wouldn't be my first choice, though, for that, just based on the fact that not only were they projected to be bad, but they're projected to be among, let's say, the bottom 3 to 5 teams in the National League overall.
Here's where it gets tricky. Talking about slow starts, everything you said obviously is true. The A's, notoriously slow starters. Look at last year, the Washington Nationals got off to a terrible start. 60-game season last year, they would not have won the World Series. But if teams know they're only playing 60 games, does that mean a really good team is less likely to get off to that bad start because they know they don't have that cushion? Also, perhaps, historically, some teams start slowly because they have guys that don't like the cold weather. Well, that's not going to be a factor this year. So I just don't think we know. And I'm also not sure how that cuts the other way. Like a team like the Giants, Giants are still going to be a bad team, right? Yeah, only 60 games. Maybe if they get off to a really hot start and get really lucky, they can coast in and kind of be relevant. But it's hard for me to imagine the Giants doing much. What do you think? I don't know how closely you've looked at this. How many wins would it take in a 60-game season to be in contention even for a wild card? You could probably be 35 wins or so, and you might be in the picture at the end of the year.
Oh, I think 35, you would definitely be in the picture. I think that number actually is going to be more like 33 or, mm-hmm, or 30, mm-hmm, or even 32, possibly, depending, yeah, upon how things shake out. You know, I look at the Giants, and I was, you know, having this conversation last week. You know, their over-under number is 25.5. And somebody had asked me, you know, just off the top of your head, what do you think, 60 games for the Giants, what do you think they go? And I said, you know what feels right? And this person had said, this person thought, boy, they could be really, really, really bad. And I had the reminder, the first number that came to mind was 25 and 35. Like 25 and 35 is mediocre. It's not good. But over a 60-game season, it's not going to be viewed as dreadfully terrible, right? Like just that number. So 25 and 35 feels about right. And then you do the math on 25 and 35, and 25 and 35 basically is a 65 and 97 year if you project it out over 162. So that's a bad, you know, that's a pretty bad team. This person had thought, boy, they could be really, really bad. And at that point, I had to almost put the reminder out there, you know, losing 2 out of 3 every series would be 20 and 40. So 20 and 40 is basically the baseline for, you know, really, really bad. You know what I mean? Like anything, mm-hmm, anything worse than 20 and 40 is just going to be catastrophically bad, like almost an outlier. Anything better than, you know, 40 and 20 obviously would be, you know, an outlier. Really, I think, you know, 37, if you look at this year, 37 and 23 is on pace to win 100 games. So I think you're looking at a range of, you know, we're talking about 37 being on pace to win 100 games, and then we're talking about, you know, 32 or 33 maybe being on pace to be in a wild card. It's just, it's all so compact that, you know, I'm not sure what to make of it. I also think we could be in a scenario where there could be a lot of different tiebreakers coming down at the end of the year too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mentioned 35. 35 should get you in easily. If you look at the winning percentages of the second wild card teams over recent seasons, and then you translate that to the 60-game season, I think you're right. I think 32 or 33. And there's going to be a whole bunch of teams. To your point, I agree. There's going to be a lot of teams probably lurking around there at the end of the year. And hopefully that won't become a real mess. How about the new rules going into effect? Now, we have one that had nothing to do with any of this shortened season. That is, pitcher has to stay in the game for 3 batters. That was already going to be in place before we knew about the shortened season. We also have now, and I really don't like this at all, extra innings. You're going to have guys starting on second base. I'm wondering what you think. You know, you could pitch a perfect game, JD, and lose. Now, that's not going to happen. You could pitch a perfect game and lose.
I hate that, but I get the need to do it this year. I hate the 3-batter rule, and I don't think that's going anywhere, but I would love to see the 3-batter rule become such an issue in the 60-game year that it gets thrown out. Again, moving forward, I don't necessarily see that happening, but I would love to get that eradicated from the game. But I think as far as the runner on second base to start extra innings, I do think it's necessary for safety. So I'm actually okay with it this year. It needs to never, ever, ever happen again. And they're not going to do that in the playoffs, is my understanding, which obviously they shouldn't. So it's tricky. It's not ideal, but you can't, I think, in this, you know, situation where you're going to have, you know, player safety as an issue, you can't have it where the games are going 16, 18, 20 innings. You know, it's just not, you know, it's just not safe.
Maybe you're right. I hadn't really looked at it that way. I'm just really resistant to that. I'm also, and I've given up the ghost on this. I know it's kind of pointless to waste time arguing about it. The universal DH, I think, is going to be here to stay. I understand this year it makes sense because, oh, we're protecting pitchers. But I think baseball has been wanting to have the universal DH in place. And this is one of the most tired debates in sports. I realize that. It's like the DH, Pete Rose Hall of Fame. I know, blah, blah, blah. That said, here we have the DH in the National League for the first time. I like baseball without the DH. It's nice having one in each league. To me, it's just more interesting. So to me, that's unfortunate, but I think that's just where we're headed.
Yeah, I hope not. Again, I also put this in the category of probably needs to happen for this year, again, because of player safety. So I'm okay, you know, not having a fit about it for 2020. I hope that it goes back to the way it was next year. I really do. And beyond, where the National League no DH, the American League has a DH, and let's just keep running it back as we have for nearly the last 50 years.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think it would take? Do you have any thoughts on what it would take for baseball to say, "Oh, this one pitcher has to face three batters. We can't do that." Maybe it would take a situation where one of the better teams, like say the Yankees, they lose a crucial game that damages their playoff hopes because they weren't able to, you know, bring in Chapman because they had to leave the previous pitcher in for three or something like that. You have any thoughts on what it would take for baseball to realize, wow, this is not going to work. We got to scrap this.
Yeah, I just think it's going to create competitive issues that managers are going to not like. Like, I just think it's going to create roster, you know, problems or it could even be injury, you know, and I know, you know, if there is an injury, a pitcher can come out, and then obviously he'd have to miss time if he did that. But I think there's going to be, I don't know. I think safety is the quickest way. I don't have an exact scenario. I just feel like it's going to be more, it's going to impact the game too much, I guess, is how I'm, you know, and I'm fascinated to see how teams attempt to work around it. And maybe it winds up not being that big of a deal, but I also think it's going to be interesting to see the data on, you know, does it really help speed up the game that much? Because that to me would be the thing that could, you know, have it go back to the way it was. If you look at the numbers, let's say from these 60 games, and it doesn't help, you know, time of game to the extent. Because I'll here's one reason why I think it might not this year. I think this year you're going to have a lot of teams because of the quick ramp up, basically the 3-week ramp up. You're going to have a lot of starting pitchers and a lot of teams where pitchers are just going to go three innings. So I think you're actually going to have more pitching changes that are going to offset the three batter rule. Like, you're going to have more pitchers that, you know, let's say are pitching three innings or three and a third, and then they get subbed out, and then another guy's going to go an inning and a third, and he's going to get subbed out, and then, you know, somebody's going to face three batters and he's going to get set. Like, I actually think there's going to be more pitchers that are going to need to be used throughout the course of this year just to get through the year, because you're not going to have your starter going even the 5 and 6 innings that has been relatively normal of late.
Yeah, it's not getting talked about a lot, but this rule was in place before we knew anything about a shortened season. New rule this year requiring a pitcher to stay in the game to face a minimum of three batters, as baseball trying to speed up the game by eliminating pitching changes. Interestingly, we talked to Dave Fleming. I think I was on with Damon Radonkolski last week, and I asked Dave Fleming about that. I say, "Hey, Dave, you know, Bochy's so good at managing his staff. If he were managing under these rules, wouldn't that take away one of the things he does best?" Dave Fleming's answer was he thinks Boch would be better at figuring out how to manage under this new rule than other managers because he's just so good with his bullpen. I think if there were something that would blow this thing up, if it would make baseball, force baseball to realize this rule, we just can't have it. Don't you think that if teams start to take advantage of the rules and, oh, he's hurt, he's got to come out. Really? Well, yeah, I mean, everybody's hurt a little bit. We have to take him out. If teams really take advantage of those loopholes and you have some questionable injuries that require a team to remove a pitcher, I could see him throwing that out. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's a good call on your part. I'm with Fleming. I do think the better managers would probably figure out a way to navigate. I'm also fascinated to see how much this is just going to blow up some of the matchup-based you know, things in terms of lineups. Like the way, like are the way team, I think it could really impact the analytics. You know, it, like you make a point to have so many, you know, the way you put your lineup together for this, like all of that is going to have to change. And I just wonder how it will change, right? If you're bringing in a lefty and then, you know, are you going to leave a righty in between two lefties in terms of your hitters? Like, I'm fascinated to see how much this changes the actual math in terms of, because let's be honest, a lot of teams build their lineups and build their rosters, you know, on a day-to-day basis based upon, you know, who they're likely to face in certain situations. I mean, all of that is, you know, it basically is like one big Strat-O-Matic game on an iPad for a lot of these teams as far as how they manage it. So I wonder how much, if at all, that gets changed. And maybe some of the analytic-driven teams are frustrated by it because it throws their algorithms off to a certain extent.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, so many teams rely on those. How big of a story do you think the Astros are going to be? People throwing at the Astros. If I were a pitcher and I were hurt by the Astros sign stealing, I would throw at them. And I'm not, you know, advocating hurting people. That's baseball justice. Somebody does something like that to you, you dot them. And I know some people cringe at that. Oh, that's barbaric. It's terrible. To me, it's part of the game. I'm not a major league player, but you know there are major league players who realize that, yeah, you step between the white lines. That's part of the justice that you subject yourself to. So if I were a pitcher, I would be thrown at those guys, especially if I'm Clayton Kershaw or somebody, I would be thrown at a few of those guys. How do you feel about that, and how big of an issue do you think that's going to be this year?
Well, we could get that chance now, right? Because the Dodgers and the Astros weren't going to face each other, but now the Dodgers and the Astros are going to face each other.
Yeah.
I think the issue is going to be the rules on fighting. Here's the thing. Like, I think there's a handful of teams that are lined up ready to fight the Astros. Like, not just hit them, but fight them. Like, hit them and then say, come out, and we're going to fight. And now there's rules against that because of player safety. So I wonder if some of that almost gets pushed to next year to a certain extent. I do think there will be players that get hit. And like I said, it's not a team-by-team thing, or, oh, the Dodgers are going to do this because the Astros won that World Series against them. Like, to me, I think you touched on it. There are just going to be individual pitchers that may have gotten wrecked in a game in Houston that weren't even on the team that they're currently on, that are going to get lined up to face these guys and want to just be like, bleep you. Mm-hmm, and, like, mm-hmm. So I think it goes well beyond specific teams. And guys that are just waiting for their turn against them. So I think this is something that could be rampant. And I think you're going to see a lot of players that are just absolutely furious because I think under the guise of safety, the Astros are going to wind up being protected. Like, I think there's going to be a shorter leash. You know, let's say the schedule comes out. I'll put it this way. Let's say the schedule comes out and the A's are playing the Astros the first series. And the A's make a point that they want a piece. They're going to drill somebody, and they want a brawl. And then the Astros get done playing the A's, and then they go down and they play the Angels. And then the Angels want a piece. And then they get like, and then they go play the Dodgers, and you know, and the Dodgers want to pee. Like to me, there's all like that's like I could see this being an issue every single series that they play for them, to a point where I think the first team that they play is going to get their shot, and then I think Major League Baseball after that is almost going to find itself in a position where they're going to just kick anybody out that throws at them. If the team immediately.
Yeah, if I'm the A's and I see that, I understand what you're saying, and we don't know who's going to play against whom when, but whoever, if I'm playing the Astros early in the season, I'm looking around going, we got to get our licks in now because everyone's going to be jumping on this and they're going to put a stop to it. So we got to make sure we get our shots in now. It's funny, a couple weeks ago, I was on the morning show and Matt Cain was on. And I asked him about that. You know, what would you do? And to his credit, you know, obviously he doesn't want to cause a controversy. And he said, kind of hemmed and hawed a little. And he gave a great answer. And he said, you know what? I think at this point, you know, forgive and forget, move on. But you, it's Matt Cain, right? Anybody remembers what happened when Holiday took out Scudero? You know, and Matt Cain plunked him next chance he got. You know Matt Cain. You know guys like Bumgarner, and maybe Bumgarner will. You know that they would take the law into their own hands, right? That's one of the things that makes them valuable to their teams.
Yeah, and I you know, I think that was one of the, if I remember correctly, in that series, the Giants waited until I think the ninth inning of game seven, or it was very late in that game when it was already decided, because I think they were up 9-1 or something like that, and they literally waited until the exact moment to where, like, basically the series had been decided and they were going to win, and then they drilled them. Like, it was it was like an insult to injury, you know, kind of a thing. I just think teams are going to get their shot, and I don't even think it's going to be get your licks in early. I think it's going to be the first team that they play is going to get their chance, and I think it's going to be a zero tolerance. Like, if there's any belief that somebody is throwing at them intentionally, I think it's just going to be an automatic ejection, and it's going to really tick off, I think, a good portion of the league, because the perception is going to be that the Astros are being protected from what they did. Now, I don't know if that leads to, you know, more, you know, pitchers maybe going after them, or more teams going after them because they're angry that the league isn't allowing it to happen. Like, I could see that being an issue. You know, any game that gets out of hand with any pitcher that you don't mind having get kicked out, that's when you're going to do it. So it still winds up being 20 games or 25 games maybe where, you know, they have to deal with it. So I think there is some potential for it to get pretty ugly.
Yeah. You made a great point. Leashes probably are going to be short this year, but the memories of baseball players are long. So if the rules are such this year where teams realize, okay, we can't get them this year, we always have next year. And baseball teams have been doing that for a long time. Whitey Gleason and John Dickinson with you real quickly here. I want to remind you that the San Francisco Department of Emergency Management urges you to stay home and avoid congregating this holiday weekend. Coronavirus is in our community. To get tested, visit sf.gov/gettestedsf or call 311. Every step you take to protect yourself also protects your loved ones. Coming up, is the 49ers top running back worth what he wants? Next, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's John Dickinson and Whitey Gleason.
One of the 49ers' surprise performers of their Super Bowl season has requested a pay raise this offseason. Does he deserve it? Should he get it? That's coming up. Also, looks like another team may be entering the Antonio Brown Derby. Whitey Gleason, John Dickinson. Before we get to any of that, JD, on the text line, 888-957-9570. Smartest listeners in radio still responding to our discussions about MLB and the Astros and how MLB may police teams throwing at the Astros from the 408. What happens if every single pitcher who faces them bruises a backside? Can the MLB suspend everyone, JD?
Yeah, I think they could, and I think it may get to the point where they do, frankly, until it stops. Like I think they were headed down this path even in a normal season, where I think it had the potential to get so ugly, you know, not only every series, but maybe even multiple times within series, where you were going to have to essentially change your fighting rules and change your rules regarding, you know, or hold, you know, players facing the Astros to a different standard after a certain point in time than maybe you would, you know, if it was some other team. So I mean, it was a major talking point and storyline for me coming into the year. But I think just the notion, Whitey, that at some point, whether it was a couple of games or a week, at some point, I felt that the league was going to have to step in and say, look, you got it. Like, this isn't going to happen anymore, because it just it has the potential to be an issue every single night.
From the 408, the first team to play the Astros will put it to them hard, because after that, the league will police it hard. I believe that's a point you were making, JD. I'm torn on the Astros, because I'm really disappointed in the way they went about winning that World Series. At the time, it seemed so inspirational. But also, I am a big Dusty fan. I'd love to see Dusty have a big year, but I don't want the Astros to succeed, so I'm torn. How do you feel? You're a Sacramento guy, big Giants fan. How do you feel about Dusty Baker?
Yeah, I mean, I like Dusty Baker a lot. He's one of my favorite people. It's hard to not pull for him, and it's unfortunate, I think, that, you know, he almost had to take that job just to get back in, you know, at this particular point in time. And I know part of that is, hey, they have a really good chance to win, but, you know, for him to get one more shot at trying to win a ring as a manager, you know, he's got to deal with it. And I think, you know, something that he wasn't a part of. I mean, I'll say this, though. I don't think you could have found a manager just better equipped to handle it, because he'll tell him just, hey, suck it up. Like, you got to own it. Like that. Like, I think he's the perfect manager with the perfect temperament for what they are going through. Right. And in some ways, the perfect hire, you know, for a couple of years to kind of get them through this period. But, you know, I find myself rooting for Dusty Baker. I'll just leave it at that.
Me too. But don't you think on some level it must be kind of tough for him? And obviously he's loyal to his team. He's a great manager. So he's looking out for his team. And he started, you know, months ago coming out and saying, look, we can't have everybody thrown at us. But Dusty, the ball player, I mean, was old school. Don't you think if Dusty Baker had played against a team that was stealing signs like that, he'd be going up to his pitcher, Sutton, whoever else, say, hey, man, you got to dock those guys. You got to have our back on this.
Yeah, I do. And I think he knows. I think he knows it's coming, and I think he knows it's warranted. I also think, you know, what he probably can hang on to is, hey, we're going to try to win this year, and we're not going to do it that way. And that's going to legitimize what maybe some of these guys that were around before did. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, let's go win now and show everybody we're just that good. And, you know, he'll be a part of that team. You know what I mean? And not the team. Because it's not going to happen this year, right? Like, you know, if they win the, aside from it being a 60-game year, you know, if the Astros go win it this year, in some ways, it, at least to them, would validate the success that they had in previous years.
Yes, yes. All right, real quickly here, Whitey Gleason, John Dickinson, shifting gears to the National Football League. Raheem Mostert requested a pay raise this offseason. And if you were Raheem Mostert, wouldn't you have done that? Where it gets interesting, of course, is the 49ers now have to look around at all as they have continued success. We want to keep these guys, but we can't pay everybody. Mostert last year, 772 yards in the regular season, and then 336 more on the ground in the postseason. Mostert, according to Josina Anderson, wants a more meaningful acknowledgement of his elevated production, end quote, beyond the rushing incentives in the contract he signed with the 49ers last March. And the 49ers and Mostert have, according to reports, they've discussed a contract extension. And I don't want to get lost in the weeds on the numbers on this here, but interesting situation in this sense, I think, JD. You've got Raheem Mostert. Maybe he looks and says, look, I was the guy last year, and he was. That said, Kyle Shanahan doesn't look at his running back stable that way, right? I mean, yeah, he rides a hot hand, and he likes having multiple guys, which would suggest to me that, okay, Mostert may get a raise, and he deserves one, but nobody, none of those guys is going to get what the top running backs are going to get, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's almost the 49ers way to kind of, you know, to save, really,
yeah,
is the fact
yeah.
that they don't have to, that they can get production out of a certain position, you know, at a lower rate and use that money elsewhere to improve the team. I mean, I think that's been a big, you know, focal point of how they've operated. It, you know, since Kyle Shanahan's taken over, it's almost been, you know, it's been get him this or that and he'll make it work. And then we'll go ahead and spend big money in other areas like the defensive line or the linebacker position, you know, areas where, you know, Richard Sherman, you know, areas where, you know, maybe they you know, need more talent. And more talent needs to be paid for. So aside from Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously, you know, being the headliner, I mean, you're seeing this situation even, I think, play out a little bit with George Kittle. You mm-hmm. know, George Kittle wants probably around $17.5 million a year. The tight end market is right around 10. So with a normal raise, he would get maybe 13 in the 49ers' eyes. So there's this gap of, let's say, between 13 that the 49ers would want to give Kittle and 17.5 that that Kittle and his camp would want. Lurking at the beneath the surface of that is, well, could the 49ers just draft another tight end next year and find the next George Kittle and create him?
Yeah. Wow. You also have this. You have Trent Williams. He can become an unrestricted free agent in 2021. Richard Sherman and Jaquiski Tartt can become unrestricted free agents. Obviously, there comes a point at which, no matter how much an NFL player has contributed, you have to say, okay, look, we just can't pay you anymore. But I just think it's really interesting looking at Mostert, how well he played last year, and how Kyle Shanahan handles the running back situation with Tevin Coleman, Matt Breida, who's gone now. And then, I mean, Jerick McKinnon. I mean, who knows? We haven't seen him work out. Maybe the 49ers get something out of Jerick McKinnon this year, right? And it's clear, looking at what the 49ers did last year and what Shanahan has done in places like Atlanta, that he loves having multiple running backs that he can count on, especially backs who can catch passes.
Yeah, maybe they get something out of Jerick McKinnon. I think, you know, the Mostert contract situation, it really is important. You know, having him at a certain rate is really important when you factor in the other players that you mentioned that are going to be up. You know, I keep coming back to that. And look, I do think the 49ers want to take care of a player that maybe is outperformed and they believe mm-hmm. will continue to outperform the deal that he's on. But and you could absolutely make a case that Mostert deserves a little bit of a raise. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they bumped him up a little bit up front and then, you know, figured out a way to spread it out. I also wouldn't be surprised if they let him, you know, play out the year and then we'll see where it's at.
From week 13 on, I believe this is NBCSportsBayArea.com pointing this out, Mostert carried the ball at least 10 times in every game from week 13 on. He averaged 6.1 yards per carry. And only Derrick Henry ran for more yards during that time. So I'm giving Raheem Mostert all the credit in the world and a great special teamer. Fabulous. But another part of this is if you go back to when Kyle Shanahan's dad ran the Broncos with the zone stretch blocking scheme, they were plugging 1,000-yard rushers in every year, right? I mean, Mike Anderson, Tatum Bell, Alandis Gary, they were great. It's easier with this scheme when it's working and you have the offensive line doing their job. It's easier to find backs. It's been proven, right? It's easier to find backs who can find the hole. If you got a guy who can hit the hole in a hurry, you've got a guy who can be effective, and that hurts a guy like Mostert. It hurts his bargaining position.
Yeah, I think it absolutely does. And although I read, and I can't remember where, I just kind of scanned. I mean, there was an article, somebody did a comparison of, you know, could Raheem Mostert be Kyle Shanahan's Terrell Davis? And I thought, well.
Wow.
And I kind of skimmed it and kind of brushed it to the side. I mean, we see so much hyperbole like that on a day in, day out basis, but, you know, especially in today's day and age. But it was just it kind of had me thinking, whoa, okay, well, maybe they do have to pay this guy, or maybe they could pay this guy and it would still wind up being a bargain if you're telling me he's going to be freaking Terrell Davis. But
yeah, wow. I mean,
but it just right. I mean,
I love those ones where they ask the question. The answer's probably no, but you can always like, hey, is he going to be the next Terrell Davis?
Could Raheem Mostert be the next Terrell Davis?
Huh. On the text line here, 888-957-9570 from the 650. I wish you'd put your name on it because I appreciate this text here. Mostert deserves more money, but he got a really nice deal from the Niners last year for a special teams ace, which is what he was before last year. Yeah, looks like they appreciate him, and they're going to give him a little something-something. It's just a matter of how much something-something he's going to want, and if he puts up those kind of numbers again, well, we'll see. Meanwhile, we know that Antonio Brown – I'll bet you're tired of talking about Antonio Brown, aren't you, JD?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, my take has remained consistent on that. I mean, I wouldn't bother if I'm the 49ers. But, yeah, I mean, I think today is the point at which, unless something new happens – and by something new, I mean actual news, not just him working out with a different NFL quarterback – when something new happens, I'd be open to continuing the conversation in the future.
It looks like we have another team potentially in the Antonio Brown Derby. And by the way, Joe Spadoni, our outstanding producer today, I was talking to him during the break and he was chuckling about teams like Seattle and Houston's another team now that, you know, they may be interested in Antonio Brown. And I said, you're a Raider fan. You can't laugh at other teams that have interest in Antonio Brown, right? He said, oh, they didn't really pay him anything. But if you're a Raider fan, I don't think you can laugh. And any team that's interested in Antonio Brown, John Dickinson.
No, you absolutely cannot. Boy, I just find it hard to trust Antonio Brown. Yes. Like I get like, cause he's just, he duped the Raiders. He kind of duped the Patriots, frankly, cause I think he knew that some of the news that broke after he joined the team was going to break. And he wanted to make sure that he got signed to another team first. I feel like he's just gone back and forth trying to fake good behavior in an attempt to get somebody to sign him. And once he gets signed, the good behavior goes away. Like, it just seems like a total con, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I hope it's not, but I agree with you. And by the way, I mentioned Houston is interested. Well, let me clarify that. Deshaun Watson on Twitter looks like he expressed some interest, and we don't know whether Bill O'Brien is interested. But I agree with you 100%. I didn't mean to cut you off there. But if you're a team like the 49ers and people have said, wow, they really need a receiver. If you're any team that needs a receiver, then that's when you can't afford Antonio Brown because he's proven that when you need him the most, he's not going to be there. So if you need Antonio Brown, that's why you can't get him. I go back even before all the Raider madness and was with the Steelers, and he missed a crucial late season game because he didn't show up to practice all week. I mean, that was an important game, and I believe they won anyway. They beat Cincinnati. But that shows me, okay, well, you're just showing me I can't count on you. And legend has it that the 49ers, when they were interested in Antonio Brown, they just wanted to see what they had here. They asked around, and they found out that he had told one of his coaches with the Steelers once, hey, just so you know, I'm not blocking today. And when the 49ers heard that story, they're like, okay, well, we're just not interested. So that's the end of this. We know what the 49ers think of him. They don't want him, and I think they're right not to want him.
Yeah, they shouldn't want him. And I think, you know, the one area where I found myself conflicted a little bit, and granted, I don't know Seattle's situation as well as I know the 49ers situation. And maybe it's just Pete Carroll, and maybe it's the fact that they've dealt with some different personalities. Like, the one thing we know about Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch's 49ers, they really don't want those type of personalities. They don't want, you know, players that are going to detach from the chemistry and the culture that they've built. You know, Richard Sherman is not Antonio Brown. Like, I know at times they get put in a similar, like, category. Richard Sherman is a complete team guy 100% of the time. You know, just
he's
because
about winning
you're,
in the team. Yeah, he's about
exactly.
winning
exactly. Just,
yeah.
Just because you're, you know, you're loud and you like to talk doesn't mean you're not about the team. You know, I think sometimes we get that confused, right? Like, Richard Sherman and Antonio Brown can both like to talk and be at the forefront of things and attention and whatever, you know, for different reasons. But they come at it from two different places completely. So they're not in the same category at all. But I look at Seattle and I just feel like Seattle, I feel like it's not a fit at all for the Niners, but Seattle could maybe make it work. And maybe it's, like I said, Pete Carroll or that some of the chaos they've had with Earl Thomas and Marshawn Lynch and different, you know, they took on Josh Gordon. I mean, I feel like they are better equipped to handle it than the 49ers are. But that doesn't mean that the 49ers should go get him just because Seattle might. Like, to me, that's incredibly foolish.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but what I hear you saying, and I agree, is that Seattle's proven they are more tolerant of that type of player than the 49ers want to be. But if I'm the 49ers, I think right now I'm thinking, go ahead, Seattle. You go ahead. You make that move. Yeah, all right. Because it's as likely that's going to blow up as not. On the text line from the 925, someone asks, a person doesn't change within a year? I don't know, maybe, but when we're talking about, we're really talking about a football team, not a person. I hope nothing but the best for him. You've also got, as we didn't talk about, potential punishments from the NFL. So if you sign a guy, you don't know how many games you're going to have him. You don't know how many games the league's going to say you can have him. And then once he is eligible, you don't know if he's going to show up. So I hope he changes. I hope he's happy. I hope he's finding happiness. But if I'm a football team, I just can't count on that guy if I'm a team that's serious about winning. Seattle, maybe. Okay, maybe Seattle at this point, maybe they're so desperate that they roll the dice, but the 49ers are not that desperate.
Well, and I think you have to – the thing if you're the 49ers, it's twofold. Can a guy change in a year? Well, I've got a take on that too, which I'll get to in a second. But as far as the 49ers, like you have to be comfortable enough that you're okay with it, even if he does play well for Seattle. That's kind of where I'm coming at it from. Like, I don't look at it. It's unique for me because if I'm the 49ers, I look at it as I don't want any part of him. And there's very good reasons I don't want any part of him. But he also could be more successful with Seattle than he would have been here. Like you almost have to acknowledge that. And it is a little bit of an uh-oh. Like if I'm Kyle Shanahan and I'm thinking, damn, like he would not work here. I don't want him here. But he might work there because they're just different. And so you almost have to acknowledge the fact that it's not, okay, Seattle, I dare you to do it because it won't work. It's be secure in yourself enough to say, just because you think it might work in Seattle, that doesn't mean you have to go do it and fit, you know, a square peg into a round hole if you're the 49ers. Like, that's the I still look at it as, well, he might be better with Seattle than he would be with us. I still don't want him. Even if that's the case,
right.
If that makes sense.
I hear you. I'm with you on that. Yeah, yeah.
The other point that I wanted to make about a guy changing in a year, like, look, here's, like, Antonio Brown wanted out of Pittsburgh, okay? He went to the Raiders. He didn't want to be a Raider. Here's my thing. If you are among those that consider the Raiders to be a joke, like, oh, of course Antonio Brown went to the Raiders and it was a bleep show and it was a joke and they didn't know how to handle him and he didn't want to be there. Even if that's your take, even if you put it on the Raiders, which I don't think it's their fault other than the fact that they probably shouldn't have even wanted him in the first place. Even if you blame it on, of course, it's the Raiders. Of course he didn't want to play there. Even if that's your take, he went to the freaking Patriots, and he got cut in a week. Mm-hmm. Like it. So if the Raiders are on one end of the spectrum in terms of, well, the Raiders aren't a stable enough franchise to have Antonio Brown. Well, the Patriots are on the other side of the spectrum, and it didn't work for the Patriots either. So don't give me this, well, can't somebody change kind of a thing. He had a chance on both ends, and it didn't work with, you know, the Steelers are one of the best franchise. You know, they were one of the best franchises going in terms of, you know,
stability.
And being able to deal with players and things like that. So, like, he hasn't been able to handle it with, you know, the elite franchises, and he hasn't been able to handle it with the less stable franchises. So when is he going to handle it? And no, I don't think he's changed. I think he's changed right up until the point that he gets signed. And then you're going to get the real Antonio Brown again.
From the 209 on the text line, folks that narcissistic don't change until they are old and broke and on 30 for 30. And I would make that a text of the day nominee, but there's no name on it. So I can't wish him the best. But again, as we discussed, you've got all the issues. You know, you've got some terrible charges against him. And in our country, you're innocent unless proven guilty. But if I'm looking at this guy and I'm looking at some of these things, boy, I don't know. Not only do I not know about the things he's accused of doing, I don't know if he's going to be eligible. I don't know how the league is going to act. And then I don't know even if all that is settled, I don't know if he's going to want to play for me. So good luck, Seattle Seahawks. I see your point, JD, and you're right. And the Seahawks take that gamble, but good luck to them.
Well, and here's just the final point that I'll bring to it. Like I have no belief that Antonio Brown isn't going to be on good behavior to the point where the 49ers sign him, and then the first game of the season, he gets one target, and in the post-game press conference, because he already knows that Jimmy Garoppolo is a hot topic around here, he says, well, this 10's got to get me the rock. Like, 10's got to get me the rock. Like, and immediately... It's a problem.
That's a problem.
In an area where the 49ers had no problems.
Mm-hmm. Just not like, worth the risk.
Exactly.
John Dickinson and Whitey Gleason coming up. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. 888-957-9570. Coming up, who does this odd NBA season set up nicely for? That's next, 95.7 The Game.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.